Hey, this is Evan Phillips from Anchorage, Alaska. You're listening to The Fern Line. Alaska, the highest concentration of big, remote mountains in North America. For generations, a unique group of climbers have tested themselves in these vast alpine arenas. The Chugach, St. Elias, the Hays, Neocola, the Kachatnas, the Revelations. Their stories are etched on high alpine walls. Their visions follow lines of cold gray ice. What inspires them? What makes them come back? Who survives? Who suffers? These are the stories we'll tell on Season 1 of The Fern Line. Hey, this is Evan Phillips, and you're listening to The Fern Line, a podcast about the lives of mountain climbers. So today I've got some exciting news to share, but first, I just want to thank everyone who's been listening to the podcast. So far, the response has been overwhelmingly positive, and in general, people who hear the podcast seem to be really stoked, so thanks for listening. If you dig the podcast, there's a couple really helpful and simple ways you can help out. The first is to review the podcast on iTunes. This is a great way to let potential listeners know that the podcast is a quality listening experience. The second is to simply tell someone. Grassroots promotion has always been the best way to share something, and it's also a great way to build community. So make sure you tell a friend. So the exciting news is that today's episode is the first installment of what I'm calling Short Ropes. Short Ropes are essentially shorter episodes that comprise of interview outtakes, trip reports, and stories about mountain and outdoor adventures in Alaska and beyond. There's a few reasons why I wanted to launch Short Ropes. The first is that I always have leftover content from my interviews, and I'd rather use it than have it sit on my shelf unused. The second reason is that I simply want to provide my listeners with more content. Short Ropes is going to allow me to release 2 episodes a month right out of the gate, which I think is great for anybody who's excited about the podcast. So with that, let's get into our first episode of Short Ropes.
I was on my way home from the wide open road. I gave my heart, I gave my soul. I was on my way home. Now the time fades away. Yesterday's like a setting sun. I always used to find myself pretending. I guess I was just young. Now my mind is returning.
In today's episode, you'll hear a more raw and unproduced segment of my chat with Alaskan alpinist Charlie Cicera. If you haven't listened to episode 1 yet, I would encourage you to check that out before listening to this episode, is there some relevant crossover.
On your face. Now there's a while at the junction.
Takes a while. So I've known Charlie for about 20 years now, and although we were never climbing partners, Charlie was always someone I looked up to and tried to emulate as a young alpinist growing up in Alaska. It was definitely a real honor when Charlie agreed to sit down and talk with me about his life and climbing career. Today's episode is a candid 20-minute clip of our interview that picks up right after Charlie had talked about his successful but tragic 1983 winter ascent on Denali. Super intense. I didn't know if you were going to want to talk about it or not.
Fine.
You know, but it's just like, you know, I've had friends who've passed away in the mountains and elsewhere, and it's, you know, the bond you have with your partners is, you know, I've never experienced that kind of bond outside of climbing.
Yeah.
And so it's, to imagine that, it's just like, sounds like it, at times it was probably like really, really emotional and difficult for you, and you had to probably just navigate that on your own. And
I think that I got criticized for being pretty cold, and you know, from with friends, you know, that but it was, you know, a part of how you protect yourself, I guess. And you know, I was on you know, I had already had the permission to go to Makalu at that point, so it was like I'm on the Makalu, you know.
So the Denali trip was in the winter of
83.
Was it in the spring side of winter?
Yeah, it was. We summited, I think, like in the end of the first week of March or something like that.
Okay, and when did you go to Makalu?
February of 84.
Okay. So before we get into that, so I have under climbing, like the five things I wrote down was I wrote down Denali West Rib, Makalu West Pillar, Mount Johnson, University Peak, and Mount Augusta. And I guess just so you kind of those are kind of the big trips that I about when I thought about, you know, talking to you. So.
Yeah. I think those are that's the notable group. There's a couple other experiences in there in the Wrangles that are that helped form me and were big place, you know, sort of big places, because what I was able to experience was to be a climber where I was really wanted it for a long, 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 long time, and I didn't always get to go, but I got to see how I would react to the sport and to the experience over 30 years versus, you know, a 5-year career or something like that. And so I changed, and motivations changed, and you know, so I was kind of keeping note of it as what was interesting or what was the experience was like. And so, you know, you as you mature as an adult into an adult and change in different parts of your life, it changed, you know, my relationship with it. So,
okay.
But yeah, those would be good highlights for sure.
So I guess maybe we should talk about Makalu, like who was on that team, and maybe just talk about that trip and talk about, you know,
it was,
I've seen the slides before like a long time ago. It seemed like it was a pretty incredible experience for you.
It was, it was a huge experience, and it scared me big time. You know, the, Russ Kelly was one of our mentors, and you know, he had soloed the last day, when he did it in 1980. And he said it was the closest he had ever come in his whole career of not making it.
Yeah.
And we were there on the fourth attempt on it. And the spring before, though the fall before us, was when Pete Hillary had a team there, and it was Bill Denz who climbed on Valdez, and he was ice climber in Valdez, and is a New Zealand guy, and he was there on that trip, and they lost two people in the fall before we got there, and I came across Bill Denz's Jumar, where he fell out of the, he came on clip from his Jumar up on the wall.
So Bill Denz died up there.
Yeah. And then another guy died on the ice ridge that was from an avalanche. They didn't fix that. They just went to kind of, I don't know why they didn't fix it, but he got swept off in an avalanche. And
so again, you're on an incredibly serious objective.
Well, we fixed 11,000 feet of rope.
Wow.
And five of us. It was Carlos Buehler, Sharon Wood, Dwayne Congdon, Albie Soul, and myself, and then we had a doctor. So, we were there 3 months, I think it was, and I spent like I think 2 or 3 weeks above 22,000.
That's pretty high.
So.
So that team, how did that all come together?
Well, it was Carlos. I was with Carlos when we put the application in Bellingham. So he and I were rock climbing partners there. And he was orchestrating it and was on this pretty big trajectory, for his own climbing. He was out of school. And the experience was really hard emotionally because... you get up really, really high, and it was the first time I was above 20, somewhere around 26, that you start to understand how you lose your sense of self-preservation because you're so, there's so little oxygen, I'd come down after the experience of being really high and all of a sudden remember what happened and become scared 3 days later because you finally understand what was going on. Like, turning upside down on a rappel or being, being throttled by something.
Yeah.
But the losing the edge of not being able to control the physical side. 'Cause Sharon and I went and put the camp in it at Camp 4 was about 25.5. And so we had to, you're hauling a load up and last little bit the pillar is about like climbing the east buttress of El Cap at 25,000. It's exactly that kind of experience, which is it's not vertical, but everything's like 5.8, 5.9, and then
sustained.
Yeah, and I led my first aid pitch at 24,000, and then I got fired because I was too slow.
Yeah,
but.
So you weren't climbing that. That wasn't like an alpine style climb.
No, we fixed it. And, and the experience, and we were there so long, you would have good days and bad days in the experience. And so I had, some terrible physical days. And some days that were just on the game. And, I got to make, biggest, hardest leads that I'd ever done. There was only... two or three people in the world that had been there, right? And it was pretty heady experience. And Carlos and I fixed most of the pillar, and it was really good weather, and it was one of those times when we were on. I was feeling good, and it was really, really cool experience to be up there and climbing at that highest standard.
So, did you guys make it to the top of the?
No, we got. We, Carlos and Dwayne, Got about 150 meters from the summit.
Really close.
and so, yeah, they got in a storm, yeah. And they couldn't quite make it. And they turned around, and Doug Scott was in a camp down below us, and he had Steve Sisted and a couple other people, and we got to talk to him. Doug Scott was really sweet to us, you know. So you know, because we were feeling bad because we missed it by just a net, yeah. and he's like, you know, you guys did okay. You
yeah.
know?
yeah. Well, so I guess if you were just to kind of like frame it up, like, what do you think? What's the most important thing that you took from that trip, or that you learned on that trip?
There are several things. You know, I did get to experience the what it meant to be, or what the top of the game was. And to play, you know, as in the baseball movie, Kevin Costner talk about being in the show. So that was okay. That's really what it is, right? And that was pretty heady. And that I realized that the really high altitude alpinism that was in that arena, that like the Poles and the Russians and a handful of people were doing at the time, was probably beyond my ability to accept the risk, and it scared me really, really deeply. And so, you know, I was like, yeah, you're pretty good, but yeah, I don't know if you really got it, because it was a very, very cold-blooded, hard place.
Yeah.
And no forgiveness.
What do you mean by cold-blooded?
Well, that you needed a level of detachment that allowed you to proceed in the face of really bad circumstances,
yeah.
And it was hard. And you know, I probably wasn't emotionally mature enough for that experience, you know, and so. You know, I think that's really where it was, that part of it.
How old were you when you did that? You were like
27.
Okay, so you're pretty young.
You know.
So what got you hooked on climbing in Alaska? Because it sounds like you've done a lot of stuff. It sounds like you've done a ton of climbing in Alaska.
Well, the climbing. Alpine climbing was my version, my artistic expression, right? And it was always about the line.
Yeah.
And so how pretty was the line that you could create in these places? And so I had the benefit of, the irony is, when Robert died, his wife gave me all his maps. And so I had these topographic maps of the whole state, and in a really deep detail before, this is for Gazetteer or whatever that is, you know, that map book. And so I studied maps, and I was always looking for places that there was no information, and where there was really tight contour lines, and just trying to figure stuff out. So I just played with maps, and I just studied maps and maps, map, map, map. So if I would find these cool features and imagine them from the map. And I didn't really need to go anywhere because it was mostly uncharted. And there's always this combination of trying to have a regular life and a climbing career and you know, and these kind of things. So those things didn't always intersect very well.
Maybe we should talk about that really quick. So when you were in your, you know, kind of getting to your mid to late 20s, how big of a part was climbing in your life? Like,
it was, there was a time when that was oxygen. That's all there was. And so, but I was trying to play this game of having a real life and this climbing experience and career, and somehow, you know, you're trying to figure out where you are as an adult, you know, who you're supposed to be, what the parents say you're supposed to be, or the society, or what is it you're supposed to, what you're there's a supposed to do, what you want to do, what you think you can do,
dilemma,
right? All those things are coming together, you know. And so relationships, and so that all those things are smashed together. And if I had been more single-minded in any one of those, I would have had more success, I think. But I might not be alive, or, you know, there's other consequences of it. But one of the things I really liked about climbing is that I would visualize these adventures for a year or two in advance, for 3 days of execution. Just like I would live them. They would always be part of me, and I would have the maps and the photographs and the research and strategize and think about it. And the game that I ended up playing with it was mostly mental, and I would try different mental models every year as a theme for the climbing, and see if I change the way I'm looking at it, do I change the experience or the results? And so I would, you know, simple things like, this year, you know, I'm going to be strong, or I'm going to be quick, I'm going to, you know, they're like little mantras, you know. And so I would do that with, and apply that theme to the climbing. That was the part of my game. But mostly it was about Alaska, was there were all these climbs that were undone, and even right here locally. So,
yeah. So at that point in time, and I'm kind of just curious about this for myself, because I am an Alaskan climber.
Yeah.
But who were like some of your peers and your contemporaries back then, who were people that you looked at in Alaska was like, oh man, they're getting after it.
Well, in the Alaskan arena, you know, we always had Tobin as the standard, you know, and because he was so strong, so cool, so, you know,
that makes me want to ask a little bit more about Carl. This is my own tangent, but yeah, it's funny, like, back then, did you guys really look at Carl and be like, oh, that guy's cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did. He was that good. He was that cool. He had it, you know. And Barry Blanchard was his buddy, you know, back in there. And they had some funny quotes about Carl, you know, and his ability. And one of them was, you know, the best one about him is that describes Carl is Barry says in a book, and he goes, and Tarzan stepped from the pages.
Falling down, picking up the pieces. Will you run around, hanging on for days? I don't mind being patient for a while. I don't mind being patient for some time. Will you all?
So there you have it, folks. I guess I've got to leave you hanging just a little bit, but I will say that we'll be getting to know Carl Tobin a little bit more later in the season. He's a truly remarkable climber, and we're certainly proud to call him one of our own here in Alaska. If you enjoy what you hear on the Fern Line, please consider supporting the podcast by giving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow the Fern Line on social media outlets like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can also subscribe at thefernline.com for monthly e-newsletters and additional content. And finally, I write and record all the music you hear on the Fern Line. If you dig the tunes you hear, you can check out more of my music on iTunes, Bandcamp, and evanphillips.net. Until next time, I'm Evan Phillips, and you're listening to the Fern Line. Yes, sir.
falling down, picking up the pieces. Will you run around, hanging on for days?